Everyone has a history. The question is, how much of that history really occurred the way it is documented? From The Life of Muad'Dib, Volume 2, by the Princess Irulan. Balut's Theater of Shards was so stunning that the architecture threatened to overshadow the performance. Paul and Bronzo stood outside the fluted gates, dizzied by the sight of millions of reflecting prisms. In such a breathtaking venue, who would want to look at mere acrobats and dancers? With its soaring crystalline towers, angled planes, and intersecting mirrors and lenses, the building seemed more optical illusion than physical structure. Paul thought he could smell the light in the air. Settling in on the planet, having worked out all the details for their main performance on Balut in a week's time, the jongleur leader got down to business. Rather than being awed by the celebrated theater of shards, Rainvar worried about possible snags in the complex stage assembly, lighting problems posed by the non-perpendicular planes of the walls, complications caused by tall turrets that would either magnify or attenuate the normal acoustics. He needed to see the inside for himself. With a terse all-business demeanor, Governor Alro Keo opened the crystalline gates to give Rainvar full access to the theater. "I intend to make the formal announcement of my betrothal to Prato Heron at your performance when I have a large audience. I ask only that your performance be perfect," she said with a hint of a smile. "Make sure your troupe gives the most impeccable show of their careers." "That's all?" Rainvar asked, half amused. "That's all." Though plump and known to be of a mature age, Governor Keo had a youthful body and complexion, undoubtedly retained through heavy and costly consumption of melange. Her fiancé was much younger. The jongleur leader removed his sparkling white top hat. "What the dance troupe does is in my purview, but I leave the politics to you, Madam Governor." She swept away, returning to her offices and leaving Rainvar, Paul, and Bronzo to walk the venue and assess what adjustments might need to be made. As the jongleur leader moved along, he carried a crystal pad projector that displayed blueprints and acoustical projections of the performing area so he could map the arrangement of his great stage. The three entered the core of the arena, where the beauty surpassed even that of the ornate exterior. Governor Keo and her young fiancé would occupy seats on a sweeping, separate balcony at the focal point of the reflected light projectors and sound wave generators. "It's not often you find a place whose real substance meets or exceeds stories of its flash and dazzle." With quick, deft motions, Rainvar made notations on the crystal pad, marking where mirrors needed to be installed, along with the correct positioning of laser projectors and amplifiers. "This theater of shards was designed and built some 50 years ago by a famous architect, whose name I forget now. One of Balut's wealthiest ruling families bankrolled the entire project, and the details were kept highly confidential. No one but the architect himself had the complete blueprints." Rainvar lowered his voice and used now familiar jongleur tricks to draw the boys into his story. "But then, on the night of the grand opening, the wealthy patriarch of the ruling family was found murdered at the hands of the architect. A day later, the architect also died mysteriously, said to have been the victim of angry members of the noble family." "Quite the drama," Bronzo chuckled. "Sounds like fodder for another play." Rainvar continued in his rich, professional voice. "Some say that this theater of shards contains a powerful secret known only to the nobleman and the architect. That's the story, anyway. I can't say whether or not it's true, but it should be." Paul looked around the arena, studying the angles, planes, prisms, and magnifiers. He gestalted and analyzed each detail as his mother had taught him to do. The theater was a monumental experiment in physics, optics, and harmonics. Bronzo stared all around. The engineers of Ix would have a grand time deconstructing the angles and focal points here. Rainvar finished making notations and handed Paul his crystal pad projector. Here's the plan, boys. You have traction pads, hooks, adhesives, and guidance calipers. I need you to hang enhancement mirrors there, there, and there. Once you're finished, run a tracer beam to make sure the surfaces are aligned, then set up secondary stations at the 5 points noted on the pad. While Bronzo seemed excited by the responsibility, Paul said, "Don't you want more seasoned stage technicians to take care of this?" "Others may be more seasoned, but you two are agile and fearless." "I am, at least." Bronzo sent a teasing look toward Paul. "I'm the accurate and meticulous one," Paul countered. "So we make a good team. Between the two of us, we'll get it done, sir." Hatred should not be so easy, nor forgiveness so difficult. Earl Rumber Vernius. The ground car sped from the starport toward Balut's capital city. In the back seat, Jessica could only hope that they would arrive in time. If Paul and Bronzo had slipped away again, if the information turned out to be a false lead, she would feel crushed, and she knew what it would do to Leto. Beside her, the Duke kept his outward emotions tightly in check, but long familiarity allowed her to read his concerns. He was a rigid man who had endured many tragedies that covered his emotions with hard scars, like those on the body of a seasoned warrior. Jessica spoke gently. "Once we see Paul, we can find out what he did and why." In Leto's reply, she heard the undertone of anger that masked his worry. "I will be interested to hear his explanation." Leto did not often show overt warmth toward Paul, maintaining what he considered to be a seemly distance, so that his son could better prepare to be Caladan's next duke. But the formality did not fool Jessica. Ever since Bronzo and Paul had run away, Leto had been worried sick, distraught even to consider what he would do if he lost his son. Only those closest to the duke could see the anger, much less look past it to his fear. Earl Rumber hunched his cyborg body on a wide seat across from them with Dr. Yui squeezed in next to him. Rumber felt an intense anxiety with an added layer of guilt, since he was sure that his own words had driven Bronzo away. As Leto stared impatiently ahead, the cyborg Earl said, "Don't scold your boy too much, Leto. For million hells, I'd bet that Paul did it out of a sense of honor, to protect Bronzo. We did make them swear to watch out for each other. You would have done the same for me when we were younger." "We weren't so foolish as those two," Rumber chuckled. "Oh, we had our moments." The vehicle took them directly to a grassy park expanse lined with Belushian maples and oaks. A number of military vehicles encircled an area where large tents had been set up, and uniformed soldiers strutted about, carrying their weapons. Behind the cordon, restless jongleur performers stood around, worried about all the fuss. "Governor Keogh has really taken this seriously," Leto said. "When I communicated with her, I had only to say that my mother was from the Balut noble family. Lady Shando is still revered here." His scarred face held an anxious smile. "The governor promised to prevent any members of the jongleur troop from slipping away." Jessica stepped out with her companions and saw a plump brunette woman followed by an entourage of formally dressed men. Alra Keo was all smiles, pleased to earn the goodwill of two great houses. "Duke Leto, Earl Rumber, your sons are safe. Rainvar was quite astonished when we revealed the true identities of his two roustabouts." Rumber was ready to surge ahead. Where are the boys? A tent flap rustled behind the group of military men, and Paul emerged from one of the tents, dressed in a white tunic and dark trousers. His black hair was tousled, and a smear of dirt crossed his forehead. Seeing his parents, he lit up and ran to them without any hesitation.
I'm so glad to see you. How did you find us?
Unabashed, he embraced his father first, but the Duke pulled back awkwardly and coolly shook the boy's hand. Jessica could see the joy and relief nearly bursting from Leto, but he locked it all inside. I am happy you're unharmed, son. That was a foolish risk you took, jeopardizing House Atreides and completely disregarding your responsibilities. You could have... Jessica squeezed Paul in a crushing hug.
We were so worried about you.
Paul saw his mother wrinkle her nose at the thick, unpleasant odors from his perspiration-damp clothes.
Bronzo and I work with animals and do other odd jobs. I've got so much to tell you both.
Leto remained stern, and Jessica understood why he felt he needed to be so harsh.
Yes, you do.
I didn't disregard my responsibility, sir.
With much more hesitation than Paul had shown, another boy appeared at the tent opening. Romber lumbered toward him, followed closely by Dr. Yui.
Bronzo!
The red-headed boy folded his arms across his chest and glared at the cyborg prince. Puffed up with anger and resentment, he struggled to maintain his hard facade, but words were already spilling out of Romber's mouth.
Oh, Bronzo. I know I handled our situation badly. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. I can't lose both Tessia and you. We had a good relationship before. Can't we go back to that and talk about what happened between us?
Bronzo's voice was as cold as the plazcrete gray of his eyes. He had been holding the words inside for some time, had probably even rehearsed them for an imagined confrontation with Romber.
You want me to forget that you lied to me all of my life? That you're not my real father?
Romber refused to accept that guilt.
A real father is the one who gives you a home and raises you, the one who trains and teaches and loves you no matter what. A real father would travel across the entire galaxy to find you, leaving everything else behind because nothing else matters as much.
Time seemed to have frozen around them, and Jessica longed to see the breach healed. She looked imploringly at Bronzo.
Reach out to him, boy.
An expression of remorse shaded the youth's face as he looked at Romber. Jessica wondered if he saw only a cyborg who was broken and deficient in so many ways. Bronzo unfolded his arms, heaved a deep breath, and after a long, silent moment, began to cry.
And my mother? Do the witches still have her?
They do.
Romber pulled the boy against his artificial chest.
I promise. You and I will travel together to Wallach 9 to see her. We'll go as soon as we leave here, and I don't care how the sisters feel about it. I'd like to watch them stop me from seeing her.
He stepped back, looking down at the boy.
Then, when we get back to Ix, we'll attend council meetings together. We'll stand firm against the technocrats as a united House Vernius. We can be strong enough to do anything.